Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. Now, we've had many successful punters, trainers, jockeys on the show over the last year, but today it's a special edition and quite a sober one too. This week is Responsible Gambling Awareness Week, and as a show that covers betting from all angles, it's a topic that we have to talk about. So who better to do that with than a recovering gambling addict? And gambling almost ruined the life of Daniel Ward, our guest today, and he's on the line to talk about how that happened and how he managed to drag himself back up again. Thanks for joining me today, Daniel, and could you start by just giving us a bit of background on how you went from gambling for fun through to it being a problem that had such an effect on your life?
Yeah, probably when I just got past the stage of, you know, when you're setting limits and going past that and going back to the ATM all the time. And then for me, it probably got to a stage where I was betting way beyond my limits and, you know, betting on credit and borrowing money and all that type of stuff. Once stuff starts to happen, it's a bit of a slippery slope. So yeah, probably once it got past that stage, that was a bit of a drama for sure.
And was that a gradual thing, or was it over a number of months or years?
No, it was probably a gradual thing. Probably went from a level that betting on horse racing, probably got introduced to a bookmaker, and the worst thing to do there was I had a decent stretch at the start, and I think you thought, how long's this been going on? And then increase your bets and all that type of stuff. And then, you know, invariably happens, the wheel turns and you end up chasing. And yeah, so that was probably over maybe a 12-month period.
And at the time you're playing AFL, and probably in those days you had a bit more time on your hands than you would as an AFL footballer these days?
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. I spoke to a few clubs about that, and you know, clubs are a lot better and filling the days, if you like, and they've got a lot that they need to do throughout the day. You know, for me, I got to a stage where, you know, maybe even if I had a couple of training sessions, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, I'd sort of race to get my fix, if you like, you know, in between and get as much punting in as I could. And, you know, even to this day, you know, I wasn't, and it's a bit of a regret that I have, because I wasn't doing those extra things that other guys were doing, or whether it was having lunches with mates or whatever. I was just getting the punt in as much as I could.
So were you betting almost every day?
Yeah, at the start, yeah, for sure. And then even towards the end, you know, once sports betting and multi-bets and all that thing basically came in, I probably couldn't watch a sporting event without gambling on it. So I had to sort of teach myself to enjoy sport. I wasn't going to give up watching sport, so I had to, you know, teach myself to enjoy watching sport without having anything riding on it.
And so for the horse racing, were you actually, you know, putting work into the form and expecting to win, or is it more about, you said that, you know, you got off to a good start and, you know, you're doing it for fun and then it got out of hand from there?
Yeah, good question. I'd spend a lot of time on Friday nights, and then, you know, even in recovery, it's, you know, meetings or whatever you go to, or going and seeing someone, you know, in recovery, you think it takes up a lot of time, but the amount of time I was putting in the researching and getting tips and doing all the form and all that type of stuff, yeah, it was so much more than in recovery now. So, yeah, I suppose everyone thinks that they've got the inside word and have it all figured out. But, yeah, I definitely would study a fair bit on a Friday night before a big race meeting for sure.
And so you mentioned the, you know, problems like, you know, going beyond your limits and borrowing money, you know, credit and the like.
Yep.
Also, heard you talk about this before and mentioned that lies often go along with it as well. When did they start and how did they, you know, impact your life?
Oh, look, they probably started probably from when I started gambling, mate, to tell you the truth. It's, you know, the old story about what you even if you've had a big win, what you sort of tell the wife, or, you know, someone asks you if you've had a really bad day and they sort of say, well, how'd you go? You sort of say, I was even. You know, that's probably goes on the whole time. It did accentuate a lot when I was getting to a stage of, you know, having to come up with stories of what's why I couldn't pay this and all that type of stuff. And once the sort of fog clears, if you like, and you're in recovery, it's you know, it's amazing how much clearer your head is, and you don't have to come up with these fanciful stories. And yeah, you know, I've spoken about it plenty of times about you probably write a couple of Hollywood scripts with, you know, stuff that I've come up with. So, you know, a tough period to have to go through that type of stuff.
And how did it go on for so long? Because I know early, I don't know if early in your career, but 2003, I think it was, you know, there's headlines about owing money to a bookmaker, and then later on there was, you know, a breach of the AFL's rule, anti-gambling rules. Yep. But that, you know, you hadn't hit rock bottom by then, or it hadn't actually been brought to a head. So how did it go on for, I don't know, less, it must have been not far off a decade.
Well, I suppose I always had, oh, you know, if there was a situation like that, or I might have a couple of months and I'd go and see someone, or I'd go to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting or something like that. And then for, you know, whatever reason, now I know how strong my addiction still is to this day. So once I sort of relaxed on that, I thought I was not maybe thinking that I was cured, that, you know, your sort of addiction is over in the corner doing push-ups and ready to pounce again. And that's what happened. It's people would think that I'd be on the straight and narrow, and then, you know, from not working on myself, if you like, and, you know, that would strike again, not getting the same. And rock bottom is probably the big thing. You know, I'd probably always think in the back of my head, well, you know, I've got another year or two of footy left and I can make that up, the hole that I was in or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I finished footy in 2007 and then that money sort of dried up, but I still was punting off and on until 2010. So just trying to fix the damage, for want of a better term, of what I'd done. And, you know, I had in my head that, you know, once I fix this damage up, you know, I'll just stop, because I was, you know, it wasn't an enjoyment thing. It was more just chasing my losses. And but obviously that never happened, and you end up digging a deeper hole.
Yeah, so tell us about the intervention that your family held and then what happened after that.
Yeah, so basically that was sort of June 25, 2010, so 4 years ago next month. Yeah, pretty much it was, I walked in, so I'd fessed up a few days earlier and basically spoke about I couldn't hold my tracks any longer, and, you know, walked into a meeting with, I just saw my wife and a psychologist, and walk in, there was, you know, my wife and her family members and my family members and, you know, a couple of friends just there to basically say that I need to go and get help, and it's been going on too long, and, you know, they've actually done everything for me, and they, you know, booked me in. All I had to do was say that I'd go and get help, and, you know, that's all I had to do was go to Adelaide, and into the rehab program over there, and that was for 30 days, and, yeah, I was in there with all different type of addicts, and used to think I was different than a bloke who stuck a needle in his arm, drug addict, but, yeah, I actually wasn't. We had the same sort of issues, but the addiction just came out in a different way, so went and did that, and luckily was taught well over there, and yeah, 4 years down the track, still haven't gone back to having a bet, but, you know, I'm only one bit away from being back down the same path, so I still gotta continue to work on that, and just realise the fact that I'm an addict for the rest of my life.
So it seems like right now you can talk about it in a pretty, you know, matter of fact manner, but when there was that, you know, the intervention and then you went to the addiction clinic,
yeah.
What was going through your mind at that time? Because you mentioned it is rock bottom, but is that what has to happen for you to get better? They talk about, you know, having to absolutely hit rock bottom before you can start the climb back up.
Yeah, I've probably spoken about this a couple of times, and that was the term rock bottom, because I basically that was there and then that I was over, left my family at home, was over in Adelaide, and basically was there on a Sunday before the program started on Monday. I was basically in a room by myself. The other two people I shared with weren't there, and they had Sundays off, and yeah, and basically just looked in the mirror and basically broke down and thought, how do I let it get to this stage? And, you know, yeah, talk about rock bottom. Yeah, I wasn't at my best then and there. So yeah, that was my rock bottom. Luckily, things have looked up since that time. But yeah, definitely when I got in there and had time to take stock about, the damage that I caused and where I was in my life. It was a pretty big moment.
And so what does the treatment involve? Because, if you're rehabbing an AFL club, it's a pretty structured process, but you can see the results. Rehabbing the brain or, the addiction part of it anyway is a little bit different. So what do they actually do for those 30 days?
So basically, it was a little bit different than, maybe a drug addict or an alcoholic. They might be on medication to help wean them off. For me, it was basically more just about, the best way to describe it is that you're actually finding out reasons, if you like, or why you spoke about before about, why did it take 10 years and it's a holistic sort of thing on you and it's not a blame game, but, reasons that may have kept occurring and this is why, because you dropped off on doing this, or this is really heightened situation for you. But there was a group of sort of 14, 15, and it was, daily, you were getting therapy daily in a group sort of situation. And yeah, there's still things that I got from that 30 day period that I still, still can remember vividly today, and different people in the room and their stories and how they got to there and, what they needed to do to get out and all that type of stuff. So it's basically just full on, you get up and you go to the gym. I was going to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning and eating healthy and then spending all day in therapy and then going to meetings and hearing other people talk at night and basically go to bed and do the same thing, repeat the same thing over and over. And, didn't get to have contact with the family for the first couple of weeks and was allowed a phone call on Sunday for the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it was a pretty full-on. It was a tough 30 days, it really was. But, I'm also glad looking back on that now that I got through that and life's got a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, it sounds like an intense crash course, but then once you're out and there's temptations again, might be a few months down the track. How do you handle those?
I think it's just expecting them and talking to people. Like, it's obviously, your people closest to you know what you've been through. And for me, or for most addictions, it's been too strong for us to handle by ourselves. So, I've had to lean on my wife and family members and friends. And when I am struggling, because you are going to have those when you're struggling. And if you try and handle it yourself and just don't speak up, that's when troubles occur. And that can lead to, getting back on that horse, if you like, again. And that's where I'm lucky is I see several other people that suffer with addiction or that go back and don't have that support, whether it's a wife or kids or, a close mate or family or whatever the case may be. I'm lucky I've got all of that, but I need to lean on those people. Otherwise, I'll go back to doing what I was doing. So it's a lot of, I'm very lucky the support that I have around me, really.
All right, so for people listening to this, what are the warning signs for them to look out for, either for themselves or even for their mate?
Yeah, probably just give yourself a little test. So whether it be, setting limits, I'm just going to leave my card at home and I'm just going to go for a punt on the Saturday. I'm just going to take $100 with me. And if I do that $100, well, I can afford that. That's fine. But I guess you've got a bit of an issue if it's then, well, I'll borrow off a mate, or I'll go back and I'll grab my ATM card, or I'll bet on credit. All these things, when you're going past, when you're thinking clearly the night before or the morning of, and you're saying, look, this is all I want to spend. And once you're sort of going past that, or whether it's, how regularly you do it, if you're doing it every day, we'll try and go 3 or 4 days or a week without it and see what that does to your moods and all that type of stuff. For me, I'm an ambassador for the Victorian Responsible Gambling Foundation. They have a program there I've got a lot of my friends onto that have had problems with the punt, and it's a program called 100 Day Challenge, where you know, you get on there and basically register, but there's stories, including myself, that did the 100-day challenge, three others, where you just go through, you know, the pitfalls of that 100 days and, you know, what your mind's doing and what it's doing to you, and it's whether you can get through that 100 days and you know, at the start, how it seems like a, you know, pretty far-fetched idea to get through, and how it gets easier, and hopefully you come to the end of it and then want to make those changes in your life. So it's, yeah, it's when you're thinking clearly, making those right decisions and then trying to stick to that. And if you go past that, well, then you may have a bit of an issue that you need to speak up and speak to someone about.
Definitely. All right. Well, it is Responsible Gambling Awareness Week, so we'll link out to some of the help you can get from various websites,
yep,
and organisations when this show is published. So really appreciate your time and how open and honest you are, Daniel. I'm sure it'll be, you know, an eye-opener for some of the guys that are listening to this who, you know, may have some of the issues that you've mentioned. So, yeah, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us.
No worries, anytime.
All right, thanks, Daniel.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.